in pursuit of Graham Walsh.
Dun, dun, dun. This is the conclusion. This is the finale.
We'll see. I mean, I texted with him about an hour and a half ago to confirm that we're good for today. He's a busy guy. I believe that in the last 5 days, he's been in Austin and out of Austin and who knows where else.
Well, look at the list of things the guy's been involved in. Like, I don't think he ever stops.
Yeah, I'm getting the idea that he works quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so, welcome to the Road the Stage.
Patrick Bateman.
Peter Michaels on my left. How are you? How's your day?
It's good. I just helped a nice little old lady. I did my good deed for the day. It's icy out there.
Do you tell her you're running late?
I helped her to where she needed to be, and then she kept talking, but I just kind of
Where was it?
Just around the corner of the back of the building here. It's all very nice. Icy in that parking lot, and she was...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in a McDonald's drive-thru the other day, downtown actually, and the drive-thru lane is so destroyed and rocky. And like, I think what happens is the water drips from the ledge and just like, so it creates these weird, I don't know, points.
Stalagmites?
Yeah, almost.
Is that the right word?
I think stalagmite
and stalactite. Let's go back to like grade 7. Yeah.
One goes up, one goes down. Is that how it works?
Where the hell that came from? I have no idea.
But my car almost just careened into the side of the building in the drive-thru lane. It was
just
terrifying.
Over.
It's
nice.
Terrifying. All right, we have a guest
Our
in the waiting room.
The pursuit is coming to a close.
The pursuit is over, finally.
Well, not, hold on a second.
I guess we haven't connected yet.
Do
That's
not
true.
Speak. Too soon yet.
That is true. The pursuit is in effect until we hear
it's
audio
coming to
and
a close.
see face.
All right, there's one.
Hello?
Holy.
Mr. Walsh.
Holy. We did it.
We did it. Yay.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm Patrick. This is Peter.
Yo.
Hi, Patrick. Hi, Peter.
You are, you're back home now or what?
I am back home. Is this better? There we go.
Yeah, that's good.
Landscape mode.
We want
to. Yeah,
dude.
Back home. Thanks. Yeah, back home. Got home on Saturday afternoon, I guess. And we're in the middle of March break, 2 week March break. So it's a little bit busy. So I apologize again for the last time.
It's all good.
You're not the first.
Has flying settled down? No problems at the airports or flights or like that's all kind of back and rolling smoothly? Sort of.
No, it's fine. Actually, it wasn't too bad. This trip, I managed to have no checked baggage. Although Debbie, who I was with, she had checked baggage and hers came through okay. I mean, the flight was full and there's all this like craziness because I had a little pedal board with me and they're like warning me I might not be able to have room to keep it on the plane. But it all worked out. So it seemed to be all right. It was worse before.
Is that paddle board, sure. That paddle board is going up on the plane with you? That's your first choice. You don't want to check that at all.
Oh man. Well, I normally do with Holy Fuck. I have a bigger paddle board, which I have to check. And, there's been two times hasn't made it in time, which is a nightmare.
Yeah.
And then, with this one, because it was South by Southwest, I don't know if either of you have been there, but like, it's just like, I didn't want to carry a giant thing around everywhere. So I pared it down and I got it to carry on size so I could have it with me and it worked out. It worked out okay. So they let me bring it on.
That's good. Yeah. That's probably a good test for future flight performances as well.
I rarely have no checked baggage. So it was pretty awesome to just get off the plane and go or like not have to walk over to, I don't know. It was great.
You Marie Kondo'd your pedal board.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I love it. Love Marie Kondo'ing my pedal board.
Dig into that a little further. How long were you in Austin for?
70
hours?
Just the two days.
Yeah. Okay. I got in the Wednesday night. Had dinner, managed to see a couple of friends play that night. And then we did three shows on Thursday and then one show on Friday and then came home on Saturday morning. So but it was good.
You're a South By vet by this point, right?
It's been a long time, but Holy Fuck has been there. I can't remember how many times. I want to say about six or so times.
Wow.
I can't remember, but we did it and we had some pretty crazy nutty ones. And then I heard it got really, we hadn't been for a while and I heard it got really insane, like very commercial and tons of people. And then I heard it got scaled back. And sure enough, when I was just there was a lot more chill. It was really nice, actually. But I think there's like a tech aspect of the South by Festival now, and a comedy and side of the festival, and the film festival, of course. So it's, in some ways, the whole thing's gotten bigger, but the music side of it isn't as nutty as it once was.
Interesting. It's funny you mentioned that, because even just, I've never been to South by, but kind of paying attention to what's going on, and there were a couple versions in the last few years that seemed incredibly corporate. Like,
yeah,
very, very corporate. So that's good to know that it may not be that way entirely.
And sponsorships of events?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, and the tech side of things invaded it, and that became huge. And, of course, it's in Austin, which is one of the, you know, hype cities of the U.S., so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I heard, like, I would talk, just talking to a friend who runs a label down there, he would have, you know, new artists going down, new signings, and he would have showcases for them, and he would, you know, the promoters from European festivals would be down there, and he would be trying to get those promoters to see his new acts play. But in the meantime, they're all watching like Snoop Dogg do a secret show on the Doritos stage in downtown. So it was like, it kind of defeated the purpose of what this thing was all about. And I think fortunately they kind of figured that out. Although there, I can't remember, somebody big was down there this year playing, but it's definitely a lot. It's friendlier for newer up and coming bands. And I think now, so it's sort of the point of it.
Did Holy Fuck have any of those like crazy moments, South by moments, making industry connections back in the day?
We got a booking agent through South by, for sure. And yeah, I think we definitely benefited from it. The first one time we were down there, we were unsigned, and had an awesome time. It was like an early time of like going somewhere we'd never ever been before and playing for a packed room full of people who were just happened to be there, and made fans and friends and connections. So that was, I don't know what year that would have been, 2006 maybe, but yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was great.
2006.
Maybe, yeah, don't get me started.
I did want to ask, like, do you consider Holy Fuck to have hit the 20-year mark yet?
No.
You're getting close, though, right?
Almost. We're almost there, yeah, but not quite. Yeah, which is that trips me out. But
stop rushing it.
What?
Rushing
what?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, when you start doing the research, it's pretty wild to, kind of look back. And I don't need to tell you this, Graham, but it's wild to look back at how much you've been involved in and for how long in this industry, in this country. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I always knew, I tried to be as aware as possible. And I even remember like having moments in the height of it, in really good times. Not that it's not good now, it's still good, but just like, take this all in, because you never know. And so I've had moments where I like been on a stage or been getting ready to perform a certain thing, or just gotten off stage doing a thing, and just trying to take as much stock as possible, because time goes fast, and we've been fortunate to have opportunities available to us that not everybody has, which has been great.
Yeah, no kidding.
To go places. Yeah.
And great to hear that you were able to be in that moment and have that, you know, to look and say, holy shit, we're here.
Yeah.
Absorb. Like, you guys, like, is there a major festival you haven't played? Coachella, Lollapalooza, Glastonbury, like, you've done, like, all of them.
We've been, we had a good run there for a bit. No complaints, obviously. Yeah, we've been very, very fortunate to do some fun stuff, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, what you're doing right now, I think initially the reason why I reached out about a month ago or a few weeks back was because I realized that your name is all over these new Debbie Friday releases, which are fucking unbelievable.
Thank you.
And that album is out this week, right?
Yep.
How long have you been working on this?
I'm bad with time, but we met up, it was like pandemic times. Maybe it was just over a year ago was when we first got teamed up, and she sent me, basically all of her Logic sessions in her tracks. And then we passed files back and forth. We did some of those, like, over the internet, like audio movers, where you, like, through the internet, you can hear, I could play her my Pro Tools session and stuff. So we did that a bunch of times. And then she came to Toronto for a week, and we did the vocals and did more sculpting and mixing and whatnot. It was a long, long time, but she's the best. Like, I've been fortunate to work with a lot of incredibly talented people.
Yeah.
Like and she's like, I have no worries about Debbie. She's such a hard worker. She's so talented. She's a force, like, on a lot of fronts. Yeah. It's been fun.
So, and then, for this project, she reached out to you to work together, or?
Through her label. Okay. Yeah. We didn't know each other beforehand. She was living in Vancouver, and yes, hence the remote working. Mm-hmm. But immediately hearing her stuff, it was just like, it resonated with me in a way that it was just exactly what I wanted and what I wanted to be part of and help. Like, it was great. And immediately kind of hit it off. I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of funny to work with, like, yeah, do a room. We had phone calls and Zoom chats and stuff like that. We started out remotely and then had a long session in Toronto working together. And then she's since moved here as well too. Now we've been doing live shows together.
Yeah. How is that? How do you feel about taking, you know, transferring studio to stage for the Debbie Friday project specifically?
Well, it's been good. I've been trying to, it's her thing. So I'm like, obviously trying to serve it as best as I can to her, like, her doing it. It's her thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to bring, as far as live goes, I'm trying to bring my own creativity and my own self into it, as respectfully as possible. And yet try to do what, you know, bring her live show. 'Cause I love that idea of, like, I always subscribe to the idea of making a record in the studio, just make the record and then figure out the live show afterwards. Mm-hmm. And if the live show is different than the record, that's cool. Like, I like that. So I like the you know, musical director idea of figuring out how you're going to play these songs live. And I had all these grand ideas with Debbie's stuff to, like, try and perform as much as possible, because it's all electronic instruments and stuff like that. But I think I reached a bit of a happy medium where a lot of it's, you know, backing tracks and I'm DJing. And then I've got my, as I was saying, my scaled down pedal board where I'm taking her vocals and tripping them out, her live vocals and tripping them out, and some elements of the backing tracks and tripping them out, and I like running them through effects and stuff like that, and adding that live as well. So I'm marrying the two, DJ and electronics performer.
And
yeah,
with,
it's,
like,
been fun.
That sounds like a lot. So what about, like, rehearsals for that? Like, are you going through a ton of rehearsals, or is it just kind of get on stage and make magic happen?
We did both. Well, we have done some rehearsals, and then we've had a few shows before South By, and like one in Toronto and one in Montreal. Those were months ago. And then for South By Southwest was a good sort of trial by fire, jump on stage with minimal or no sound checks. But we got it down. It's not as difficult. It's fortunately the setup that I have is easy. Like, if I don't do anything, the show will go off just fine, and there's room for me to add as I see fit and get more creative. So as long as if I'm nervous or I'm scared and I don't do anything, then things will be fine. But there is room for me to kind of interject things and make it a little more, have a little more engagement with the music live, and that makes it fun for me.
And you can do that on the fly then. So there are some things that you can add in on the fly. Yeah.
Correct. Yes. Yes. Sorry. My brain went faster than my mouth could go. Yeah. But yes, you summed it up perfectly.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, we're like, just curious, like, what is your mind state when you're on stage, when you are performing? 'Cause it sounds like, I mean, obviously you have a lot to think about to begin with, but now that you are, trying to lift up another artist in front of you, beside you, whatever it is, I don't know, like, where are your priorities, I guess?
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously it's just to serve the songs as best as possible. Not get in the way too much, but get in the way, or not get in the way too much, but jump out at key parts,
right,
in key moments is sort of what I've been trying to do again, because I think it can make it a little more engaging for the audience, give it a little bit more of a depth other than just somebody singing over top of backing tracks. So that's sort of where my head is at with that. And I'm still kind of finding that out and working that through, but we have, Debbie and I have more shows coming up. So,
and what kind of thing, like, what are you looking at, in reading the crowd to determine, you know, if you can add a little something here or something there? What is it you like to see?
I'm not even really reading the crowd, actually. That's the funny thing. Even with Holy Fuck stuff, I'm very, in the band, I'm rarely looking at the audience. I don't know if it's not necessarily a self-indulgent thing. It's just because I'm just focusing on the music and what I want to do. And then, so not usually, and then with same with Debbie, I'm not really too focused on that. I'm just trying to listen to the song and be in the song in the moment. And I feel like that will then translate to the audience.
Any plans to tour out this part of Canada with Debbie?
She has some dates in April. There's a Vancouver date. And we're doing more American stuff. There's a Toronto date and a Montreal. So actually we're playing Montreal on Friday, and this coming Friday, and Toronto show this Saturday.
Oh, damn.
These are all the release shows. Yep. And then Vancouver in April, which will be part of a West Coast US run. And then there'll be more US dates in April as well too. And then she's going to Europe in May. There's a bunch of dates I'm not doing.
Right.
Because she's going to be going to Europe in 3 weeks, for 4 or 3 weeks. And I can't really go away for that long. And then there's financial reasons as well. She's got to do it on the, make it work financially. So
right.
I'm not doing those ones, but yeah, she's got a lot on the go coming up. There's a bunch of stuff happening. It's pretty exciting. It's awesome.
Do you feel any way about this album compared to ones that you've worked on in the past that's different or brings you more excitement going into 23?
Yeah, well, yeah, I do, actually. I don't know. I try and, I mean, I've worked with, I'm proud of all the, I don't work on anything unless I'm like, I can be really in it. And that's just for me. Like, I don't know. I want to work with people where I can bring something to the table and I can really get my hands dirty. I love it. So all the records I work on, I feel really passionate about. This one was special. I like working one-on-one with other artists. It was super fun because she basically came to me with these built ups, these songs in Logic that she had and these sessions. And it was like, help me finish these. And so this one was fun. It was a little bit more involved in like sculpting and editing what she'd given me. And I was, adding bits here and there where appropriate, and then mixing as well too. So this one felt good. Like, some records I'll mix and that's super fun for what it is. Some records I'll engineer only, and that can be super fun. And this one was a lot of everything. And then, and getting involved, extra creatively as well too, which was really, really fun.
Did you choose the Michael Shannon sample or?
No, well, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Debbie. She did it's her beats and stuff like that. And again, and that was another sort of big thing for me, is just like working with somebody who's like, oh shit, like your sounds are awesome. Your productions are awesome. This is really inspiring for me. Like, this is really, really, really cool. To what she brought to the table.
I actually went down a rabbit hole when I realized that that was a Michael Shannon quote from The Runaways to kick off. So I was like, oh, I wonder how often Michael Shannon has been sampled in music. Have you tried ChatGPT yet?
Yeah, a little bit. Yep.
So I asked ChatGPT, where is Mike? What songs are Michael Shannon? Is Michael Shannon voice lines sampled on? It looks, I mean, I don't know if it's right. It might be pumping out shit, but I've got a list of like 10, 13. There's Kendrick, Danny Brown is here, Run the Jewels, Phoebe Bridgers, Death Grips, Action Bronson, Adams for Peace. I got a fact check.
I was going to say, sure it didn't get mixed up with Molly Shannon maybe at some point on?
That would be even more strange if there were a bunch of songs sampling Molly Shannon. Michael Shannon, I understand. Yeah. It's a legendary voice, intensity, humor. But anyways, I didn't know. Maybe that could be a producer's signature, is just making sure Michael Shannon voice lines are in all of their songs.
Yeah, exactly. That's an interesting rabbit hole to go down, because now that you've got the list, I would want to go and listen to all those songs and find the samples and see how it got used and stuff like that.
Is that something that you have? Like, I was listening to some of your solo tunes that you've released, which a lot of them are years and years and years old, right? Your electronic mixes. Is that something that you play around? Do you often hide things in your production?
Well, you know, the more and more I work on or make stuff, the more I realize I love sampling and samplers and stuff like that. I have a bunch of analog synths and things like that, and they're cool, but I've always been really engaged with sampling and samplers and take recording sounds and capturing other sounds and turning them into things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a song on like a Holy Fuck song starts, the main loop is like a heartbeat that's just completely warped and morphed, or like noise floor from a piece of equipment. You take that and you kind of chop it up or morph it into a loop or something that pulses or whatever. So I'm always doing that kind of stuff. And even recently just built another, like a modular setup that's all based around sampling and sound capturing and manipulating those things and coming up with new sounds and stuff. It's just really, it's really fun and inspiring. And it's sort of a good way of making yourself as close to the audience as possible. Cause you're just taking other things and I don't know, you surprise yourself and you hear it and things in a new way, and that they send you off onto tangents and help you songwrite.
And are you mining some of those sounds yourself? Like, are you, you know, say you're out for a walk and you'll hear a click or something somewhere and you'll go record it?
Yeah,
and do something.
I'll do that. I have a Zoom recorder often. It's a lot of times it's records too. Like, I have a couple record players down here and sample that way. I have one Caliphone record. Lately, I've had this Caliphone record player for over 20 years, but it's been fun to take vinyl records from, and you can slow them down and it'll play 16 speed really slow. So you can just it's like you're unlocking a whole other dimension of stuff. So you find minimal classical records or anything. And you, again, it's like you're the observer now, and you listen to these, you listen to sounds completely manipulated, and you hear something that strikes you and you just capture it. So and that's the beauty thing about sampling and capturing and mining things, is it can literally come from anywhere.
Yeah, and I imagine, and again, just with the longevity that you've had it in as well, it's limitless, right? Because you can, like, it's limitless.
Absolutely limitless, yes. My last cell phone died because my windshield wipers last winter the ice was on the windshield in the perfect spot where it made the best drum loop. I captured it with my phone and then my phone died and I lost that one. But that was another good recent one.
You can never recreate that either.
No, the feel was just perfect and it's gone. But
were you driving when you realized that?
No, fortunately not. I was in the car. I was parked waiting for my daughter, and I think there were windshield wipers were going off. And I was like, damn. It's great.
This slaps.
I love that.
Yeah, totally.
That's interesting. I never really thought about that. I mean, I feel like you could almost drive yourself crazy with the limitless opportunity for sound. Yeah.
You can't go anywhere without hearing something, right? Like.
Yes. Well, I don't know. It's all I I live in music, and I'm trying to always hear stuff. So it's not, I guess I'm crazy all the time.
Is there ever, like, do you ever just check out? Like, is there ever a chance to just turn that creative brain off for a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. It's not that bad. It's, I can turn it off, I guess. I don't know. I'm always like listening though.
I was going to say, I get the feeling you probably don't want to turn it off very often, right?
Not too much, no.
No, not when you're in discovery mode.
Yeah.
Well, unless you have the tools nowadays. Just like I have a portable cassette player that I've brought around with me from time to time. But like you've got your phone. It's obviously like if you hear something, you've got your voice recorder, and there's always you can record it with your phone. It's always there, so it's easy to grab stuff.
Okay, I want to go back because, I know we haven't established Holy Fuck as a full 20-year band yet, but we're getting there. It'll be there in a couple years. I'm just curious, because it does sound like the birth of the band was maybe a little different than how other bands are born or realize their creativity. So can you tell us a bit about Dependent Music?
Yeah, a little bit. That was Brian's thing. Brian started Dependent with a couple friends. They had the idea of, I think it was more of a collective than a label. Mm-hmm. I think they didn't want to make it more of a label. They just wanted to make it a collective. And I mean, he's always looking out for new music. And this, of course, the scene in Yarmouth and in Nova Scotia was, there was amazing stuff coming out of there. And of course, made sense to try and showcase that. So yeah, him and Judd started that. And took it as far as they could. I think having a label is a hard thing to sustain. So it lasted as long as it could. But yeah, I think me being an Ontario guy, I wasn't as like in the circle. I was sort of, when I started playing with Brian, I was brought into that world, and it was rad to see that community that they had out there. So it's a wonderful thing. And yeah, and then like a lot of things I've learned about, I figured out in life, Holy Fuck started as with like no expectations, just kind of like, let's just like fuck around. And who knows what will happen. And then of course, here we are like almost talking about being a 20-year long thing. It's sort of insane. But yeah, when I started playing with Brian on his solo records, I was playing guitar, and then we both bonded over the fact that we both had Casio SK1s and loved making weird experimental music with those and toy keyboards and just making messed up dancey techno music. I was probably more into techno and electronic music than he was at the time. But yeah, when we started, I remember the first jam that we had with that, like it was me and Brian, and Brian was playing in By Divine Right at the time as well, with John Hall, and was Dylan playing bass? Anyways, it was the first jam. It was like, this is awesome. I see so much potential here. This in creativity, it was hitting all the right marks for me. So it was immediately amazing to do.
And what were you playing in that first jam?
Because I was playing guitar with Brian, I literally just like had my pedal board from my guitar, and I just put my pedal board on a keyboard stand and brought it up off the floor and had my Casio SK1 going through my pedal board, and that was it. Yeah, that's exactly what I was playing.
That sounds like it would have been the greatest day ever.
It's, you know, a Casio through a guitar pedal board is always the greatest day ever. It's so fun. It is seriously so fun, and I encourage anybody to do that.
So did the name Holy Fuck just come from your reaction to that original jam?
I think, well, Brian came up with it. It was his reaction from, he was writing, he was... had his Casio going through stuff into his 4-track cassette player. I think one day he was just like recording, capturing all these crazy loops. And that was his reaction. I think he just finished recording these distorted, messed up loops and then just wrote Holy Fuck on this on the cassette tape, and that then became the name of the band.
And like, because at that time it would have been much harder to use that name than it is now, I think. Is that fair to say?
I guess so. I would say so. Although,
or did you guys just not care at the time? Just made a decision. Whatever. This is it, and we're.
Well, we had no expectations. I mean, right, it was just like, what is this? Who cares? Like, I don't know. We'll play like there was an experimental. Like, I don't know if you remember Wavelength Music Night in Toronto. Like, let's just play Wavelength. It would look funny on a flyer to see that band name and just make our friends laugh, and of course it encapsulated the music. So yeah, there was no expectations. And then all of a sudden, like, well, hey, like, Pop Montreal want you guys to play. Like, whoa, cool, that's awesome. And then we play Pop Montreal, and then our friend sees us play there, who became our close friend, Beans, MC Beans from Anti-Pop Consortium was there. He saw us play, loved it, and then he wanted us to be his backing band. And then next thing you know, like a month later, we're going to do our first show at Coachella, and I'm backing up Beans. It's like, how does it, like, it was, yeah. I mean, there was a lot leading up to that too, but yeah, it was pretty nuts. So
that's crazy.
Yes. And there have been moments throughout the years where I've heard our name hindered us. There's a couple stories, but now obviously I'm sure there's other opportunities where the name has prevented us from opportunities that we've never heard of because they just never presented themselves to. So, but I'd say by and large, the name has not hindered our musical career.
Were there pressures at all anywhere? Like, did you have somebody actually come and say to you, you guys might want to consider?
With all the bullshit we've heard given as advice in this industry, I find it hard to believe that that's not something they pick on. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my dad was the first one to, when the band, although my father's incredibly supportive, I'll start with that, but I think when I first told him that this was a thing, he thought like, oh, you're gonna change that name, right? Like, you can't.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, Dad. And then I remember telling my grandma, his mom, and she loved it and laughed her ass off, and I think that kind of softened the with him. And then of course, when, like, as you know, it's like, well, you know, like a couple years in, I was like, Dad, I'm doing this now. And obviously it showed him that it didn't matter. I mean, it's not like he was totally against the name. And obviously with the name, like, people, they're very apologetic, and, you know, we can't say, we have to call you Holy F. Is that okay? And it's like, of course, like, we're not
doing this interview.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We had one opportunity where, early on in our career, we were supposed to play Canada Day in Trafalgar Square in London. And I think, I don't know if they still do, but it was a thing where, like, on Canada Day in Trafalgar Square in London, the Canadian consulate would set up a bunch of like a concert.
Yeah.
And bring Canadian bands over to play. It's awesome. And they would cover your flights to go there and play, and maybe some other things. And it was great. So we got an opportunity not only to do that, but that was also the first year we got asked to play the Glastonbury Festival, which was like mind blowing. And so we did that. We booked that, and I think booked a few other shows around it. And then about a week or two before we were supposed to fly over to do this Canada Day show, the Canadian consulate sent us an email, or a manager's an email, and said that the mayor of London found out about the show and saw that there was a band called Holy Fuck on the bill, and was like, no, like, this, it's an all ages event, it's outside, it's public, like, we can't have a band called Holy Fuck on this concert. So
just
no,
just because,
like,
the use of the word holy.
Yeah, probably, exactly, probably. So the consulate were just like, we're so sorry, but we have to, like, it's the mayor, we have to pull you guys, like, it's, there's nothing we can do. And which meant our flights went away.
Oh man.
All like our flight costs went away, and we were, and it was like, I want to say it was a week before or whatever, it was a ridiculously short amount of time before we're supposed to go over to do Glastonbury, and this was early, we're broke. So we basically had to suck it up and find, like, buy four flights, last minute flights to London, England, so we could go over, like, maxed out all our credit cards and go over. And we did it. sure enough, it was, and we played, and it was funny. But that was one huge moment. And then someone told me recently that the mayor, who would have been the mayor of London at the time,
was it Boris,
would have
right?
been Boris.
Yeah.
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 It would have been him, because it was probably, yeah, like 2007, maybe 2008. I don't remember the, I'm bad with the years, but yeah, it was probably, and then that, which is also extra hilarious, because it would have been Boris. Anyways, that was one epic one where our name hindered us and we kind of got fucked, but we still went over and did it anyways and sucked it up.
It is kind of nice, though, from my perspective, to be in a position where you were responsible for the mayor of one of the biggest cities in the world wasting yes. their time on something completely fucking meaningless.
Completely. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it had to be yep. Boris Bojo.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Yeah, I did, because I had a blast actually doing some research a week or two ago, and just some of the headlines of articles and blogs like holy fuck, and holy fuck, so good, or holy mm-hmm. fuck, help Chrysler build a new car company. I found that blog post from 2009, mm-hmm. holy fuck, help Chrysler build a new car company, and it reminded me of how frustrating mid-2000s music blogs must have been as an artist, because there's so much like cynicism and anger, but at the same time in this specific blog he's like calling out Chrysler for using a holy fuck song to rebrand their company, and mm-hmm. also kind of calling out the band for selling out, but right. then he wraps up the blog being like, holy fuck's awesome.
Yeah.
Can't blame him for doing
that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an interesting time. I mean, that license was great. Boy, oh boy. But it was, I recall, like, there was the time when I think early days, because it was shunned for musicians to sell out and license songs to ads and stuff like that. And I remember there's that shift started to happen
with Apple ads probably
early on. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, because I think there was a couple opportunities we had early on that we were sort of, I think we basically said, our manager at the time was like, guys, like, what are you doing? Because we'd be like, well, you know, pondering these licenses. And yeah. she's like, what are you doing? Rightfully so. And so as time went on, we started agreeing to things a little bit more. Obviously, it's, yeah, that Chrysler one was a good one.
Well, and that song's been used in so much, like, so, so much. It's a very memorable track.
Yes, thank you. Yes, we had a good run with that one.
It's got to be a tough to balance it out, though, because on the one hand, I'm sure you want to keep that artistic integrity and so on and so forth, but at the other time, it's nice to get a paycheck, right?
Yeah, and that's totally shifted now. Like there are exceptions to the rule, but I think by and large, I don't know if you feel the same way, but like this public understands, like when they hear a song and an ad, they know who would, you know, they want. They can separate the two now, I think. I don't know. There's some songs I hear and I can't separate it from that company, but I think it's changed now for sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't blame it when, I mean, it's not a fucking weapons manufacturing company either. So it's like.
Yes.
That you know of.
Well, I don't know. I think we'd know if Chrysler was maybe making missiles, but.
Yeah, maybe if you dig deep enough. I don't know. I remember there was like an investment firm that wanted to license that song to an ad. And it was like, who do they invest in? What company? And at the end of the day, it's like, well, I guess all companies, all corporations are evil at the end of the day.
Yeah,
most
yeah.
of them are. So if you're going to either, I think that was the argument was like either license your songs to everything or don't. Just do it or don't do it. If you choose not to do it, cool. Just don't do it. And there yeah. are bands that don't do it. They just say no to everything. That's respectable too. And I guess once you start picking and choosing, then maybe there's a bit of like hypocritical thought there. But
what about for the use of that music in movies and television? I mean, obviously,
love
you love it. Are you in a place where you're signing off on every use, or is that just all done through sync services? Because like
we have
Mr. Robot, there's a great use of that track in Mr. Robot. I cannot think of a better song to use in that specific scene.
Yeah,
it just works perfectly.
We've been fortunate to have really, really good licenses in that regard. We have a publisher that we go through with that, but I think more often we'll sign off more on those sorts of things, for sure. I mean, I don't know. You it's blatantly obvious now how well like the right sync and the right show at the right time will just boost everything up. The artist, the show itself. So it's, yeah, I love that stuff. And yeah. I'm a huge fan of movies and TV, and I love film scoring, and I want to do more of that kind of stuff. So, and I do that sort of stuff as well too. So I hopefully anything to feed that world. I love it.
Yeah. You worked on the 2014 film, The Guest, right? You compose the music for that?
Nope.
Oh my God. Maybe that's chat GPT fuck up. Is. Holy fuck. The Guest, 2014?
No.
Okay, but Farmer Bro.
Farmer Bro, yes.
Farmer Bro.
Yes, so that's right.
I am so curious because I was mildly obsessed with Martin Shkreli for a few months.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. For a few months. And then for many months when I worked on that documentary. And that one was really fascinating. And that, of course, what Brent did with that movie unearthed all this other information that I had no idea, and I don't think maybe the general public didn't really know about. And it was kind of fascinating to work on that one, and super fun. Love it.
Yeah. So you spent like an insane amount of time watching and listening to Martin Shkreli in preparation to score that, right?
And and not as much as Brent did.
Yeah,
because Brent.
Yeah.
He recorded got all the live stream stuff. I think he had a team of people helping him go through all that footage of just like
all the
monotonous
like YouTube streams and stuff.
Because they had to just look for find the stuff there, and they found all that. There's some really, really key scenes in the documentary that they found by pouring through all that footage. And, it was interesting. Brent found an apartment in the same building as Martin, kind of like spied on him and then met him.
God.
And it's really interesting. Yeah, it's a really interesting story. But yeah, he definitely is a modern day supervillain. It's kind of funny.
It was such a fascinating time because when that was all going down, there was something about me that really wanted to appreciate what he was doing or the perspective that he said he was doing it, he was coming from.
Yeah.
Just got fooled in the end.
Well, and the other thing is like to consider is to go deeper is like what he did isn't illegal.
No.
And other people do it. And it happens all the time. And the only reason he came to light is because he's such a shithead.
Yeah.
And he's just such a wiener. And
his ego
and
is insane.
Yeah, exactly. And then he got arrested. He didn't even get arrested for that. He got arrested and put in jail for something completely different. But anyways, it's a really fascinating story.
Yeah, and that's work that you hope to do going forward as well?
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit more of it. I've been working with my friend Alex in the last few years too, doing some film scoring and then my wife and I have been writing some music for kids TV as well too, so
trying
to do a bunch of stuff. Yeah
That's very cool.
Yep.
You already have shows lined up?
We've done, well, Alex and I have done a few. We did a documentary on Justin Pearson from 31G or The Locust, and there's a documentary about him that this guy John made that's out, and Alex and I did music for that with this other musician, Luke, who's great, and that's out. And then we've done a couple other like made-for-TV movies that have aired and stuff like that. It's just like honing your chops kind of thing. It's fun stuff. And we have some work lined up in the next month. And then Julian, my wife, and I have been, that was sort of a pandemic job that came about of writing music for some kids' shows. She's got a degree in early childhood education music, like for Suzuki music for young children. So that helps, like, that kind of got her foot in the door with this production company. And so we make just real fun little kids stuff, and I don't know if it's good.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah. It is. It's really good. It reminds you to like not to overthink things.
Oh yeah.
So it's sort of funny. Like I try and apply that to like other, like you just don't have to, nothing. It doesn't have to be too complicated. Just keep it simple and apply that mindset to other music and stuff that I try and make. So.
No, it's good.
It's fine. What was the project you thought that Graham had done that he was? What?
The Guest?
The Guest.
Starring
so is it,
Dan Stevens and Lance Reddick, Rest in Power.
Is it possible that you've done so many projects? Are there some that you've forgotten that you've done? Like, it just, it's mind-boggling how much you've been involved in. You can't possibly remember every project.
I'll give you that. I have a terrible memory, but that one definitely does not ring a bell. Unless there was a license. Maybe there was a license... Like they licensed a Holy Fuck song or something to it. Well, is that a movie or is it a TV show?
It's a movie.
I'm going to look it up on it. Yeah.
So the reason I brought that up, and it wasn't in my initial research from last week. It was actually today. I tried ChatGPT for the first time. So I was like, fine, let's punch in a couple questions about Graham Walsh. So fact check this. Overall, Graham Walsh is an accomplished musician and producer who's made a significant impact on the Canadian music scene with his work in Holy Fuck and beyond. You accept it? Humbly.
Sure, I appreciate it. Thanks.
They have also collaborated with a number of other artists, including Bjork.
Nope.
Feist.
Not
David
really.
Bowie.
What? Wow.
I don't think this AI is as smart as everyone's telling us it is.
No.
I was going to say Bowie. Jesus,
that's
Christ.
Impressive.
It's read my... dream list, maybe.
Yeah. Bjork, Feist, and well, at least Feist is probably attainable. I would think.
You think
easier than Bowie and Bjork,
for sure.
Bowie definitely.
Well, I mean, we live in the same town.
That's true. I did like because the first time I was really aware of you was because of your Nude remix, way back in the day. Now, Was that like a situation where Radiohead had kind of released the stems for Nude and given it up, or was this? Yeah, it is. So that was kind of the start of their remixes projects.
It was an early one. We shared the same label with them at the time, and it was sort of like, hey, they're gonna do this, and they sent us the stems out. I think. Maybe it was to sort of like as a way of, I don't know if it was a way of getting the word out there or whatnot. Not that we would, I don't know. We were the first ones to get the stems, and then they put out the stems to everyone, to the general public. And then we spent, we drove ourselves insane doing that whilst on tour.
Oh my God.
And went into, asked a friend, we were on our way to Los Angeles, asked a friend there if they could find us a studio, which they did. We went into the drummer from the Stone Temple Pilots studio and recorded overnight. Like they had another session in there during the day, and we got there in the evening. I had to wait until the engineer there or the producer there was done. So we basically recorded and worked from like midnight to 5 a.m. or something through the night, and just tracked stuff, and then continued to work on it and edit it and mix and add stuff in the van on tour, and then delivered it. Yeah, it was kind of crazy.
So you're telling me at the beginning, early stages of your career, you receive the stems to a new Radiohead song with the request to do something with it, and no one else has on the planet presumably has had that same request at that moment.
For that moment,
that's insane.
It was awesome having it's like Tom York isolated vocal track. Maybe it's less special now. Wow. Like there's those things are floating around, but at the time I was like, this is awesome.
That's fucking wild. I have to imagine that they're a pretty influential band on you.
1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Big time. And remain to be, and everything they do. Smile is awesome. Big fan for sure.
Are you, personally want to know, but is Amnesiac like God tier record for you, or do you prefer the other stuff?
I'm going to give a very diplomatic answer here and say that I love everything. There's like, there's shit on every record that I've absolutely loved. And so, yeah, I wouldn't say there's one album in particular. Cause I like Kid A as well. Well, a lot too. That's a good, that might be one that maybe more formative to me than Amnesiac. That's why it's hard. I can't.
Well, Amnesiac's like you're fully in the water. Kid A is you're starting to dip your toes.
Well, I like dipping, I guess maybe, because that's the thing, because I don't swim. I like swimming.
Oh, okay.
And I like, but I like, I don't, I rarely do I dive into the ocean, but I'll get in up to my waist and I'll like, if the pool's too cold, I'll dip my toes in. I'm trying to speak metaphorically here, but I like, I don't know. But I like, but the thing is maybe why I like Kid A a lot is because I love OK Computer.
Yeah.
And I remember when that album came out, I remember sitting in my car and they were like premiering it over the radio and like hearing this shit like on a rainy day in my car and just being like, what the fuck's going on here?
Yeah.
And that really, really hit me at the perfect time in my life. And then of course Kid A happens and you're just like, yeah, like that's the middle of the bridge and you're like, this is sick. And then Amnesiac I love. So yeah, I can't decide. And then if there's, I have like a playlist of like where everything from every record is sort of where I mostly go to.
Oh shit, I'd love to see that. Is that a public playlist?
No. Yeah, it's in my head. Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very cool. I was very curious about that.
I'm going to pick your brain on how do you keep your brain organized? Like you have to, with all of this shit going on, you have to be the most organized person on the planet.
No. I try and write lists, but I'm not very organized and I do get forgetful and I forget emails and that really makes me sad and gets me down. And I do try not to like, I try to organize things as much. I just try and be busy. And that's the thing. Like, I don't know. It's hard being a musician and I love doing it. And I love doing a lot of different parts of it. So, if I have a lot of plates spinning, I'm running around spinning them all, but I don't know. I try to keep things as organized as possible, not too busy to the detriment of something. So yeah, I don't know, but you're right. I try and keep that in check.
Cause I mean, we've been talking for, I think almost an hour and we haven't even mentioned Noble Rot yet.
I know. the future is awaiting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Another zero expectations project that is again, like I don't know what will happen, where it will go. It's exciting. Alex and I we've known each other for years and years and have been kind of in each other's orbit for a long time. And right before maybe 2019, early 2019, we started getting together. Because again, like keeping with your like all the musical things I like to do, a lot of it has a purpose, and it's great to have a purpose for your music and your art. You know, you're going to make a record to hopefully put out, or you're going to help somebody make a record that's going to hopefully come out, or that's going to come out. But rarely do we get together for no reason. And like linking it back to being a kid and just like inviting your friend over to come like just to play. And so that was sort of the beginning of that, or the new evolution of our musical relationship was just like, do you want to just like come over and just make stuff? I'm like, what for? Who cares? I don't know. Maybe nothing comes about of it. So Alex would come over to my house and we'd just make weird experimental things and drones or whatnot and hang out, and then we had to go pick up our kids at school and we would break and that would be it. And we started amassing some bits out of that. And then when lockdown happened and the Mets tour got canceled and the Holy Fuck tour got canceled, and we both kind of realized we were maybe gonna go insane because winter is coming, we just decided to go to studio once a week, and my friends at a studio here called Palace let us go in there once a week. We just made it a scheduled thing, like let's go in every Wednesday, and we just did that and started making more stuff. And again, and then we had a body of work and these pieces, and decided to just make a record. Well, yeah, we thought maybe this could be a record, and then we started getting friends involved to contribute, and Alex sent stuff to Jasmine from No Joy, and like, hey, would you maybe want to like sing on some of the stuff? And she did, and later she mentioned like she'd really liked the music, and she's on this label called oh my god, Joyful Noise. Sorry, okay, my brain shut down there. So yeah, she's on Joyful Noise, and they do this white label series, and where they an artist on that, it's an artist curated little white label series that they do. And would we mind if she chose, like, do you have any plans for this? Because I would love to include this as my submission for this white label series. If you were thinking about putting a record together, and it was like, yeah. Oh, sure. Sure, like this could be a thing. And that was another one of these like catalysts of like making it a like, I think we had the band name at the time and thought like, well, let's make this a thing. And that was another big catalyst for like getting this music out there and like and making a record proper and putting a record together. And yeah, and it's just kind of sort of somewhat snowballed from there, and it's coming, it also comes out on Friday, the whole record.
I love it. And that all started with Let's Fuck Around.
That's it's all started with Let's Fuck Around. Same thing 18 years ago, like this, yeah. Fuck around, because which is sort of my advice for anybody like in any art, just like just make shit, do shit, and temper your expectations, but come at it with enthusiasm and things will happen. It may not be what you expect it to be, but as long as you follow the path, you'll get somewhere.
Yeah, and don't set your expectations too high. Yeah.
Well, not, yeah, especially not in this day and age.
You got anything else?
I'm good.
The this only, awesome. Only yeah. other thing that I will mention is that another reason I really enjoyed doing research for this interview is that, believe it or not, we're almost at this is episode 90?
In the
episode
ballpark?
90 of The Road to Stage is the first time that I've rewatched an old Jean Gomeshi interview to prepare. And I completely forgot that, oh yeah, that's one of the guys that inspired me to get into radio.
Nice.
I forgot about that. And now watching old Jean Gomeshi interviews. But you've got your Tom Power interview down now too, so we can forget about the old one, I guess.
Yeah. That is what it is. But I love it. I love that you're doing this podcast. It's great. Great to be a part of it. And thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Graham. We really appreciate you taking the time. We got you. We got
it. We got it.
Yes.
We got the pursuit is done.
Sorry about that.
Don't worry about it, dude. It's all good. It's all good.
Okay, cool. All right.
Thanks again, and congrats on the all the music releasing this week.
And just
thanks, man.
Keep fucking around.
Have a great year, dude.
I will. Take it easy.
Peace. Right on. Are we still recording? All right. Nice guy.
Super nice guy.
Nice guy.
I just love with people like that, too, to try to get inside and figure out how it all... Because there's so much. I've got like three... biggish projects on the go this week, and I'm ready to just fucking shut down.
Well, I mean,
I just want to shut down.
Yeah, and I mean, we could have brought it up, but we didn't even talk about half the shit. Like, the guy's been involved in records from Hannah Georges, July Talk, Born Ruffians, Mets, Preoccupations, Bully Lights. The list goes on, and Always is on there too. Did I say Always?
Nope.
Anyways, it's crazy how involved he's been in the scene.
Yeah.
For a long while now.
A lot.
Not too long.
Hands
too long.
In a lot of different. Projects.
So thanks to Graham Walsh of Holy Fuck, and worked on the new Debbie Friday album coming out this week. Please check that. I've only heard a few songs so far, but they've been on repeat. Super, super good stuff.
I was glad to see the ChatGPT fucked up a little bit there.
It's a shame.
There's a lot of concern in my world about that ChatGPT right now.
Yeah, I know, because they're going to start replacing you guys. They already have started, right?
Replace us at some point, I think, right?
Crazy. Over my dead body, AI.
Exactly. Can AI get the amazing subscriptions we've gotten on the Communal Creative Studios YouTube page?
I'll show you these hands, ChatGPT.
I doubt it.
All right, what were we talking about?
Go subscribe. That's
to the
your
YouTube
thing.
Channel, Communal Creative Studios. Check it out. We're trying to hit 700 subscribers, and we're almost there. Will you be the one that helps us reach the goal? I hope so.
Don't make us turn to AI for that shit.
Oh, that's true. I'm going to ask ChatGPT, how do we get more subscribers on YouTube? Yeah, thanks, Pete.
Hopefully, we'll be back next
Wednesday.